Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand, created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com.
So Betty Friedan and the feminists of the 60s and 70s fought for women to be equal, but many thought the road to equality lay through choice. Of course, they thought that if a woman could choose whether to stay at home with the kids and the laundry or have careers and converse with adults all day, there would be no competition. Well, it wasn't so simple. Instead, for many women, more choice leads to more guilt and defensiveness over that road not taken. And either way, there's still the laundry and the dirty dishes. Now we have the so-called mommy wars between the stay-at-homes and the work outsides, though I think that's overblown by the media. Linda Hirschman fired a salvo in that battle at the end of last year in the American Prospect magazine with a much-read and much-forwarded article entitled Homeward Bound that argued that choice feminism wouldn't lead to equality. Power didn't come from homemaking, but from economic wherewithal, and educations were being wasted on child-rearing. You should see the stats, if you haven't, for the percentage of educated women who are not working full-time after they become mothers. The reaction was strong to this article, and she's expanded this essay into a book called Get to Work, A Manifesto for Women of the World. It's out from Viking, and as part of our series of reading projects here on The Brian Lehrer Show, many of you know we've had an excerpt on our website for the past week. It's still up there. You can go and look at it right now. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. And if you have read it, you can call in with your questions or reactions for Linda Hirschman at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Even if you haven't, you can participate in the conversation as you get the idea of what it's about, or email brianlehrershow@wnyc.org. What would your manifesto for women include? Linda Hirschman has taught and practiced law, including arguing three cases before the Supreme Court. She's a retired professor of philosophy and women's studies at Brandeis and a wife and mother. Welcome to WNYC, Linda. Hello.
Thank you so much for having me.
So choice has always been seen as a good thing, as empowering, as putting decision-making in the hands of the individuals. And yet here you are saying that having choices or choice feminism is a shadowy remnant of the original movement. How come?
Right. Well, choice is a good thing, but it's an instrument. It's like a car. It's not inherently good or bad. It's how you use it. So if you use your choice in the direction of a flourishing life, you have to have choice. If someone's a slave, they're not going to be able to choose a good life. So you have to have it. It's what we philosophers call necessary, but not sufficient, not enough. Then you have to use it to go in the direction of a good life. And I think the original feminist movement understood that. I mean, that was a very robust and substantive manifesto that Betty Friedan wrote all these years ago. But somehow the act of choosing became a substitute for thinking seriously about the actual choice.
But are you saying that women, and, you know, at 11 o'clock in the morning, we have a lot of educated stay at home by choice, they say, moms in the audience. So if some of you are taking this as a personal challenge, you can call in at 212-433-WNYC. Are you saying they know not what they choose?
I'm saying that they have made the decision in the context of a half-changed world. So first of all, the workplace, it makes it difficult and is not as rewarding to women as it is to men. Secondly, the household is still a site of substantial gender stereotyping, so women are expected to bear and do bear 70% of the work of raising children and keeping house. And thirdly, they've been bombarded with messages from the conservative, resurgent conservative movement in America telling them to stay home and exalting motherhood. So if they're choosing, they're choosing in a setting in which a lot of things are pushing them in the direction of staying home.
Let's take a phone call right away. Felice and Pelham, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling, Felice.
Thanks for having me on the line. I wanted to say that, first of all, I respect Dr. Hirschman's intellect greatly, but I think that she's got the conclusion wrong here. And the reason is that I think that, I don't think that my social utility in my former job, which was as a highly paid reinsurance lawyer, is higher than at my current job, which is as a stay-at-home mother to two children. Part of that is that child raising is itself, I think, socially useful. And the other part is that now I have a chance to actually do things in the community that I never could do before, given my previous work schedule. So I think what I take issue with most is the idea that what I was doing before was somehow more valuable than the choice that I've made now. And sort of connected to that, I guess I would say also that I think that Dr. Hirschman has a really good gig as a philosopher and as a law professor, and that that might be the kind of gig where you actually do find a flourishing life through work. But most of us don't, and most of us do find a flourishing life through family.
So, well, Professor Hirschman, go ahead.
The most of us who find a flourishing life through family are 98% female. So I'm always concerned and skeptical about a definition of a good life that only women are participating in. If it is so good, why are 98% of men not doing it?
Well, so I would be the last one to argue that men know exactly what's right in all situations. So I'd say that they probably have this one wrong, too. And as you pointed out in your opening, society pushes women to do things, and I think society pushes men to do things, too. And right now that means that men should work.
Right. So I'm trying to open up the discussion and say, okay, let's try and think about these competing visions of life without the push from society. It's refreshing to hear someone finally admit that both women are pushed home and men are pushed to work. So neither one of those is a good way to make the decision. So let's try to open it up and think substantively about the lives. And what I would say about the value of a life staying home and raising children rather than being a reinsurance lawyer is...
By the way, Felice, it sounds like the demands of the job are pressing in on you there.
Right.
So maybe you need to go.
No, I'm. As you can see, the demands of this job can get a little vocal sometimes.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But Professor Hirschman, go ahead and finish your thought.
I have two other standards for a good life. One is, are you dependent on another human being for your survival and well-being? And I think that quitting your job and depending on your husband's income is an extremely risky strategy and not a good life. And the other is, are you fully using your capacities? And one of the things that we've seen is that the marginal value that stay-at-home moms add to the well-being of their children simply is not that great. The children of working moms do just fine. Finally, when I actually looked at what the stay-at-home moms were doing for their communities when I did my little survey, I found that most of their volunteer work was at the schools where their children were going anyway, so it's just another iteration of taking care of the children.
Felice, are you still there?
I am still here.
So let me ask you to follow up on one thing there, and I'm going to read a line from Linda's book that amplifies what she just said. She said, bounding home is not good for women and it's not good for the society. They aren't using their capacities fully. Their so-called free choice makes them unfree dependents on their husbands. Here's the part I want you to react to, though. Whether they leave the workplace altogether or just cut back their commitment, their talent and education are lost from the public world to the private world of laundry and kissing boo-boos.
Right. Well, I think there's two things I'd respond to that. The first is what I said earlier, that I'm not convinced that my talents were of so much social utility in my previous life as a highly paid big firm lawyer. I was making corporations a lot of money, but I'm not sure that I was doing anything that philosophers can think and say, you know, this is socially valuable. It was economically valuable.
Right. So, Linda Hirschman, you disagree on
public
utility.
I get this a lot from the left because... In fact, that essentially is a variation of the argument that capitalism isn't valuable. And indeed, the market economy has produced a great deal of luxury and comfort from pain and opportunities for arts and culture and so forth. So I would not denigrate the life of a lawyer in a big firm, the social utility. It's part of a market economy, which is, on the whole, a pretty good thing.
Felice, thank you very much for taking time out from the very demanding your work you obviously have on your hands there and joining this conversation. Professor Hirschman, you said you get this a lot from the left. Do you consider yourself of the right?
No, I actually consider myself to be the golden mean.
The golden mean?
So I get criticized from the right. People tell me that God tells them that women should stay home and that women are naturally fit for the home because of the monkeys stayed home in Africa. And I get criticism from the left to say that their jobs had no value. I don't know what the prior caller was doing going to law school and all that to prepare for a job that she thought had no value. But, you know, a lot of criticism from the left about how elite jobs have no value and my work has no value because I'm not helping the minimum wage employees at the Walmart. So I get criticized from both the left and the right.
Linda Hirschman and Joe Lieberman finding themselves in the same boat today.
Oh, goodness, I hope not.
Retired professor of philosophy and women's studies at Brandeis in this case and the author of the new book, Get to Work, A Manifesto for Women of the World. We have an excerpt up on our webpage as our latest Brian Lehrer Show reading project. You can go to WNYC.org and read for yourself. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. You list in the book four items for your, I guess five items, for your strategic plan to get to work.
Right.
One, don't study art. Two, never quit a job until you have another one. Three, never know when you're out of milk. Four, consider a reproductive strike. And five, get the government you deserve. Let's go over a couple of these. You start with don't study art. That's going to take some of our listeners aback.
Right. Well, what I say is prepare yourself. Use your education to prepare yourself for a life of work. Life is long and college is short.
Not a life of dependency. If a woman studies art, chances are she's going to wind up being economically dependent on her husband. Is that that point?
That is correct. And I believe that if people are discouraged from doing it, then only people who really feel it as a passionate calling mm-hmm. will do it. And they will succeed because they will be willing to make sacrifices for their art. What I'm really saying, that's a shorthand, mm-hmm. for don't dabble.
Never know when you're out of milk.
Right. That is, don't take on the burden of the household to yourself, because pretty soon you're going to wind up doing 70% of the housekeeping and child rearing. And very good economic studies show that the more housework you do, the less career advancement you achieve.
So if hubby goes to the refrigerator for a glass of milk and finds there isn't one, and you say, oh, I didn't notice.
Right. Oh, no milk?
Then he's going to start to own the responsibility or part of it.
Or be thirsty.
Yeah. And what's the reproductive strike?
Well, I actually got this from Judith Stadman Tucker from Mothers Movement Online. There's apparently a fair amount of sociological data that women can manage one child and a full-time career with a man in the house. Married couples both can continue to work with one child. But when the family has a second child, that's the time when the woman feels overwhelmed with her 70% of housework and child rearing and leaves the workplace. So I was actually advocating it as a pro-child move. It's been read as being an injunction to not have children, but actually I was responding to people who keep saying to me, do you mean we should have no children? And do we have to choose between having children and working? And my answer to that is, have one child. You don't have to choose between having children and working. Then, if both of you want more children, you have to get an enforceable bargain that does not lay 70% of the work on you.
We have a lot of calls, as you would imagine. We have emails coming in. We'll hear from a lot more of these people as we continue in a minute with Linda Hirschman, author of Get to Work, A Manifesto for Women of the World. And we'll also find out where the men come in. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we are coming up, of course, to the fifth anniversary of the September 11th attacks, and we're devoting some of our programming between now and then to reflections on what we have learned. What have we learned about our country, about ourselves as individuals, about the rest of the world? What have we learned that has confirmed our beliefs and assumptions about things, and what have we learned that has shaken them? We are inviting your emails on the question, and we'll be posting some of them on our webpage between now and the 11th. What have we learned that's important in the 5 years since September 11th? We want you to share your thoughts on that with us. We'll read some of them on the air, put some of them on our website. Email brianlehrershow@wnyc.org. And we're talking with Linda Hirschman right now. She's the author of Get to Work, a manifesto for women of the world. It's our latest Brian Lehrer Show reading project, and you can still read the excerpt that we have up there on our webpage at wnyc.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Let's go right to another caller, Pat in Philadelphia. You're on WNYC. Hi, Pat.
Hi, how are you?
All right, how you doing?
This is fascinating. I want to suggest something that may be a trend that I'm participating in that I don't know whether your speaker has picked up on, which is that I had my first child when I was 40, had another child when I was 44, and immediately went part-time, not because I felt the children needed it, because I felt that my life would be too stressed out. I didn't want to participate in a job that required a lot of traveling and raise my kids. So I'm working part-time. I work from home most of the time. I'm a lawyer, and I get paid by the hour, so I can work as many or as few hours as I want, as long as I accomplish the things I'm meant to accomplish. And I'm finding that what I get to do is avoid a lot of the meaningless FaceTime stuff that the male lawyers and the women lawyers who are not at home, you know, not working part-time, have to participate in the, you know, trips that are just to put in, show the flag, that kind of thing. And I'm still progressing in my career, making a good living, and having, you know, the ability to enjoy my kids and not feel guilty, but to really kind of enjoy my house, too, which I love, you know. So, and my sister is doing the same thing, and I think the key to it is that you have to have enough value already. You can't do this when you're 25. You have to have enough value for your company that you can negotiate the arrangement with them. Mm-hmm. But I see that happening more and more.
Well, the more power you have, the better deal you're going to be able to make.
Right.
So that is a good insight, and I agree with it, and I wish that more women understood it. Do you mind if I ask whether the children have a father in the house?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
and
did he cut
he
back
to...
I'm sorry?
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Did he cut back to part-time?
No, but I have told him, and he's often miserable at the amount of hours he's worked, and I have told him we could make it work together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that would be in many ways ideal. My ideal, I guess, is that I would like to see mothers and fathers raising children and working, and I would like to see the effect that would have on the workplace.
So maybe your book is misdirected. Instead of a manifesto, instead of Get to Work, a manifesto for women of the world, you need to write Go Home, a manifesto for men of the world.
Well, in fact, men will not do that until women stop bearing 70% of the housework and child rearing. They will not do that. This woman caller sounds extremely intelligent and clever and like good company, and they got two kids and stuff, and the husband is still working so many hours that it makes him feel terrible at the end of the week.
That assumes that given equal power, men and women will choose the same thing in the same proportions.
Right, and I think that if men are confronted with the fact that they cannot have the children and household that they want unless they fully participate in it, then they will be pressed to make a different balance between work and home.
Pat, what do you think about that? Do you think it would come out that way?
Well, it hasn't in my situation. It hasn't in my sister's situation. I think men feel a success imperative. They feel more defined by work than women do. I think it can change slowly. Certainly, if I was my husband, I would have taken me up on my offer.
This is such an interesting and important issue. I mean, this is like a really important issue because we still don't know how women would treat their career success, how they would value it, what place they would put it in the hierarchy of their lives, when there continues to be bad discrimination in the workplace, and when the whole expectation is that if somebody stays home or cuts back, it's going to be them. So we just don't know yet how women would embrace or think about their ultimate work success until those things get removed.
Or men, because Pat's
right.
talking about a situation where she's offering her husband,
right.
who feels overworked and overstressed,
right.
the option of doing what she's doing and say, we'll get by, we'll make enough money if you cut back, and he says no.
Right, but the previous caller said something so smart, which is that these men are the product of the gender ideology that says that they have to be flying around the country to have meaningless meetings in order to advance their careers, just like the women are the product of the gender ideology that says if somebody's going to stay home, it's going to be you. So what my goal is, as a writer and as a thinker, is to start changing the conversation. Say, why do we have these beliefs? Do these beliefs lead to a good life? Do they lead to a balanced life? Maybe we ought to rethink this rigid division of responsibility.
Pat, thanks so much for your call. Here's Liz listening on the satellite in Carbondale, Illinois. You're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. And I just wanted to say that I'm a doctoral student studying gender and communication, and so these issues are very interesting and important to me. My husband and I are actually both in the program, and we've talked about having children when we're done and how we're going to balance that and trying to have each other stay home, you know, a decent amount of time. And so I just wanted to say that I think it's really important to also just question the definition of work in our society and how that becomes just so important that, you know, most fathers don't take their paternity leave. Mothers are only taking a week off maximum. And I think that that's another thing that we really need to critique if we're ever going to move forward. And another point that I would like to make is just that while I agree with Dr. Hirschman on many of her points, I just feel that discussing it in more of the absolute terms of what people should do, I feel like in some ways kind of just fuels the further debate between stay-at-home mothers and people who work. And I just feel like for gender equality to actually become better in this society, for sexism to decrease, I wish that women could just join more together and start critiquing this patriarchal culture that we live in and not just the women who need to work. And that's just the sentiment that I'd like to express.
Okay, Liz. Linda Hirschman, sounds
okay,
like she's on you.
This is a manifestation of something that gets said a lot when the subject of women is on the table, which is, why can't we all just get along? You notice that nobody said in the Connecticut primary, okay, why can't we all just get along, right? Nobody said, gee, we shouldn't have an anti-war candidate running against a pro-war candidate because that just divides us. Why do we not apply this, why can't we all just get along business, to any issue except the issue of women? And my answer is that the hidden message here is that women's lives are not worthy of politics. I am engaged in politics. I admit it frankly. I am doing what philosophers have done since Plato. I am trying to patch out the definition of a good human life. I am giving women the dignity of applying it and the respect of applying it to their lives. I am saying, yes, women, your life decisions and your effect on the culture are just as important as questions of economic distribution or war and peace or any of the life and death, any of the other questions that we divide on and debate about and argue about and vote about. Women's lives are just as important as any other subject, and they are deserving of politics.
Liz, thank you very much for your call. This is 93.9 and AM 820 WNYC and WNYC.org. Linda Hirschman, author of Get to Work, a manifesto for women of the world. An excerpt is our latest Brian Lehrer Show reading project. You can still see the excerpt on our webpage. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. And April in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, April.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to just make a reference to Ms. Hirschman's comments about women's talents being lost to the private world of laundry and kissing boo-boos. And I just wanted to comment on the idea of something being lost there and the idea of the women's world as being less valuable. I think that's an old stereotype. I think by playing into that idea of divided value is really limiting, and I think what is important is to focus on the fact that although it does not make money, it is valuable. And I think we need to look at it outside of the boundaries of career and finance and place judgment, place value on that as
and,
well.
And April, did you tell my screener that you think Professor Hirschman's values are sexist?
What I said was that it is sexist to look at that world, the private world of laundry and kissing boo-boos, as less valuable.
Okay, well, this is actually a very important issue, and it usually takes the form of the idea that women see morality in a different voice and that we've got to stop applying the standards from 2,500 years of Western philosophy, which was all white males and many of them bachelors at that. So it's an interesting and important point, and indeed all of the callers have had good, subtle points, and I want to give it the respect that it deserves. It is true that the private life of the household has always been devalued, not paid. Circular thing, is it devalued because women do it, or do women do it because it's devalued? I'm not sure. And I don't want to play into that. I want to approach it as a human task and apply standards that I would apply to any human task. Is it complicated? Does it involve your full intellectual capacities? People are gifted above all with speech and reason. Does it involve your capacity for speech and reason? Interacting with other adults requires people to be prudent and to be clever, to be self-disciplined, to be moderate. Many things that we have, I think, appropriately associate with a fully developed human being. And what I am saying is that applying those objective standards to the work of the market or the government on the one hand, or the work of the household on the other, the work of the household largely comes out as the lesser work, not because women do it, but because it's mostly physical rather than intellectual, and because it's repetitious, and because it's not done in full view of the rest of society, so it isn't either honored or criticized. You don't take risks, and you're not judged. So in those objective ways, I would say that it is a lesser body of work. But it's a good question and worth making some effort to answer.
April?
Yes. Well, actually, I'm studying to become a teacher. So I think that working with children, which is one of the areas of things that work that we do in the home, is complicated, does involve speech and reason, does require a fully developed human being, and in fact is one of our most important jobs as humans.
Well, teaching, I mean, I would be the last person to denigrate teaching. Teaching is just a very small part of what stay-at-home moms do, okay? I mean, if you look at their sort of self-kept diaries, and people have looked at this in sociological studies, of how they spend their time, the act of teaching is actually a relatively small percentage of their time. So I would certainly accept that. Children go to school relatively early, and most of the teaching goes on there. I commend you for your ambition to be a teacher. I do think that that does involve all of the capacities we just discussed.
Are you also a little frustrated, though, Professor Hirschman, when you still see so many women relative to men going into teaching, working with children?
I'm not. I think that I would not fall into the trap of thinking that it's a bad job just because women choose to do it, okay? I think that teaching other human beings is objectively using your speech, your reason, your capacity for self-discipline, moderation, courage, all the things that go into being a full human being. So I would not say that. I think the jobs aren't very well paid. I think they should be much better paid.
There's no less limitation, by society of the choices that women have that kind of track a lot of them to wind up thinking they want to choose teaching, in your opinion?
Well, they go into teaching sometimes because they need to be home at 3 o'clock to do their 70% of the housework
right.
and child rearing. And that, I think, is unfortunate. I wouldn't want someone teaching, I wouldn't want a fellow teacher of mine or someone mm-hmm. teaching my children to be there because of the schedule.
April, thanks so much for your call. We just have a few minutes left with Linda Hirschman. I want to get to a couple of other things real quick. Your manifesto is really aimed at elite women, educated women who have choices, because you were so stunned by the percentages of the choices they were actually making. What about working class women, uneducated women, women without as much choice?
Well, the more choice you have, the more scope you have for moral behavior, right? I mean, people in concentration camps are not someone that we would criticize for their choices because they just didn't have enough freedom of movement, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the more money you have and the more education you have, the more choices you have, the more we, I think, should be looking at your choices and evaluating them. So I do agree with that. I have noticed that when I was a practicing law, I represented organized labor. So I had a lot of working class clients. And one of the things that I observed over the many years that I represented them was that the workplace, even a regular old blue-collar union workplace, provided them with the society of other adults. And there is a society of the workplace that had value to them. And that, I think, is something that we've kind of lost sight of. So, I mean, people denigrate jobs. They're always writing to me about people who work for Walmart as if they were animals in a zoo. It's sort of horrifying, actually. And I wonder whether they don't get something from their work, like the society of other adults and the opportunity to, you know, to rise in their jobs and stuff that we're missing. At least I know I observed that when I was a union-side labor lawyer all those years.
And one other thing, I gather you say that Gloria Steinem led feminism astray?
Well, you know, I think she did the best she could, and I certainly would not in any way say she didn't contribute heavily to the movement. I think that when feminism blinked and started talking simply about choice and including everybody in the movement, they did it because they felt they had to survive, but I think they lost something crucial, which is if you're everything, you sort of have to be nothing. And that, I think, was terribly costly to the feminists. Movement. And, you know, I think that, you know, just to go back to your Lieberman remark, he actually was only criticized from the left, if you think about it. But
just wait till the general election.
Right. Well, we'll see, right. But who runs? But I think that, you know, in a sense, you know, like Lieberman, to try to be everything, you wind up sort of being nothing. And so it's understandable that the people who want to make social change would look elsewhere for leadership.
Linda Hirschman has written Get to Work, A Manifesto for Women of the World. You can still read the excerpt on our website as our latest Brian Lehrer Show reading project at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. The book is published by Viking. Linda Hirschman, thanks so much for coming on and taking calls with us.
I love your reading project. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, coming up in 20 minutes, more on spousal relations with Amy Sutherland, author of the most forwarded New York Times article for weeks and weeks this summer, the one called What Shamu Taught Me About a Happy Marriage. Can you train your spouse to know how much milk is left in the fridge like you would train an exotic animal? We'll find out. But first, it is Labor Day in America, and in just a minute, we'll talk about the increasingly common two-tier employment in the United States, with new workers getting lower wages and benefits than current workers. That's a lot of what the New York City transit strike was about last winter, you may remember. But it's happening more and more in corporate America. We'll talk about it in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.